in the news, behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at. Illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that's going to determine what the future will bring. And I have to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They're my views. Was Mr. Streitz with us? Well, our guest this afternoon was to be Mr. Paul Streitz. He was to call in, but since he hasn't called, why, I guess it's going to be just you and me. And basically, I wanted to point out that I'm very, very concerned that sometime within the next 4 to 6 months, why we will be at war with Iran. You see, we're in an awful mess in Iraq. I mean, things are going from bad to worse. How are we going to solve the problem? Well, you're going to create a worse problem, so nobody's even going to be concerned about what's going on in Iraq by the time we get into a war with Iran, which will have terrible complications, not only for the suffering people of Iran and for our troops in Iraq, but for certainly our country and the people of the Muslim world. And, you know, if you look at what's going on today from a logical point of view, how can you explain Ahmadinejad, President Ahmadinejad of Iran, making such stupid mistakes? Now, President Ahmadinejad is not a stupid man. And yet he's talking about how the Western world, how America and the Western Christian civilization is going to fade away, and how Israel is going to be wiped off the face of the map, and there is no Holocaust, and all of these things that they're designed for one thing and one thing only, and that is to provoke a war. Why would any logical person want to provoke a war, especially with the United States, which is militarily the most powerful nation that the world has ever seen? I mean, certainly with one of our carrier groups, we could certainly wipe out the whole of Iran in a very, very short period of time. Why would Ahmadinejad do what he's doing? And I believe that he is playing his part. I believe that we see the actors out there. We see them move their arms and their legs, but we don't see the puppet master who's pulling the strings, and there's no logical explanation for what's going on other than they intentionally are using Ahmadinejad, and he's a willing participant in this effort to precipitate a war, which will have terrible results and devastating results on his country and our country. And it should realize that behind the scenes there are other forces. There really are other organizations out there that are directing what's going on, and I know because I read their publications. And I just read something last night put out by World Goodwill, which is a front for the Lucis Trust, and goes right along with a new group of World Servers. And they've all got websites up there. You can check them out and find out. And they talk about the plan with a capital P that is being directed by the spiritual hierarchy that rules the world. And there really is a spiritual hierarchy that rules the world. And if you haven't read my three pamphlet set on the occult hierarchy, you need to get it. And we simply quote what they say. They're quite open about it, but they figure that you're so stupid, you people out there in the audience, that you'll never bother to look into this and find out whether what we're saying is true or not. Because they think they're on the winning side, and that we're on the losing side, and they think they're going to triumph in their effort to create a new world order and a new world religion. And Mr. Streitz is with us. Hi, Paul. How are you doing?
I'm fine.
Why don't you tell our listeners just a little bit about who you are? I know because you've run for political office in the past, and now you're, of course, working in your state trying to educate the people about what's going on. So you pick up the story.
Okay. I was a founder of the Connecticut Citizens for Immigration Control in Connecticut, and that really was the first spark plug of the immigration issue in Connecticut and how it affected the citizens. Prior to that, there'd been practically no news coverage of the issue. And so we've gone in 2003 to 2006 where every time an immigration issue comes up, the newspapers feel compelled to report on it. I mean, they might not agree with what's happening or agree on our point of view, but the issue is out there and the public is certainly aware.
Hold that thought. We'll be right back in a moment.
Yes, there is a choice, a real alternative when it comes to news and information. The GCN Radio Network has become a world leader for those who want to know the truth. Visit GCNLive.com today and discover the amazing benefit of becoming a subscriber to the GCNLive.com Radio Club. By becoming a monthly subscriber, you gain access to higher quality audio streams of all of the compelling GCN broadcasts. A full archive of the shows are posted on a daily basis within 3 hours, so you can listen to what you want, when you want, fast forward, rewind, pause, and at the same time, you are supporting a beacon of free speech. Visit GCNLive.com and become a member. It's so easy. There's a choice. There is an alternative, and it's called GCNLive.com. Visit GCNLive.com today. You can also get the entire month of your favorite show on MP3 CD that plays on computers and most CD and DVD players for only $19.95. Go to GCNLive.com or call toll-free 877-300-7645.
Black Berkey purification elements are more powerful than any gravity filter element on the market. These awesome elements are used in Berkey purification systems, and they can also be used to upgrade most other gravity filtration systems. They can purify raw, untreated water by removing pathogenic bacteria, cysts, parasites, trihalomethanes, and chemicals such as chlorine, atrazine, styrene, and MTBE. These elements also reduce unwanted heavy metals such as lead, mercury, and aluminum. Unbelievably, they even remove small microparticulate from water like food coloring particles. Yet, they leave in the nutritional minerals that your body needs. Moreover, because they are recleanable, Black Berkey elements are more economical than the standard disposable elements, providing fresh, pure water for less than 2 cents per gallon.
Get a 2-pack for only $99 or a 4-pack for only $188 by calling New Millennium at 888-803-4438. That's 888-803-4438 or order on the web at berkeywater.com.
Attention, attention everyone, a brand new invention just released. It's called WristEase, the new patented portable ergonomic wrist support. WristEase comforts your wrists from the sometimes painful tasks of typing, writing, using a mouse, or adding machine. Unlike most conventional wrist pads that are either attached to a mouse pad or lay flat in front of your keyboard, WristEase is totally portable and ideal for laptop users and technicians who are constantly on the go. WristEase is perfect for children doing homework or playing video games. WristEase provides the proper comfort and support for all ages and makes a great stocking stuffer. Honest, WristEase provides comfort for victims of carpal tunnel syndrome and other repetitive injuries. You can order WristEase now at WristEase.com. That's WristEase, W-R-I-S-T-E-A-S-E, WristEase.com. Once again, WristEase.com.
We have Dr. Stan back here at the Genesis Communication Network, and our guest is Paul Streitz with the Connecticut group that's addressing the issue of immigration. Do you have a big problem with immigration there in Connecticut, Paul?
I don't think there's any place in the United States that does not have an immigration problem. I mean, it's just all over. I was reading about upstate New York, where I was originally from, and farmers, and you look across the fields of some of the crops that are being brought in, all illegals. Connecticut, you know, Danbury is the worst area. Farms, you know, I go to McDonald's, there's no Americans working there anymore. It's consistently a problem anywhere where you go.
But, of course, it's being encouraged by the current administration, as was encouraged by the Clinton administration before them. They refused to secure the borders. They have a catch-and-release program where they catch the people and they promptly release them. They refuse to go after employers, or every once in a while they go after them, you know, just to give the idea that they're trying to enforce the laws. But we have lawbreakers who are really controlling the government. What can you and I as citizens do when we have people in government who have a different agenda, who are dedicated not to the preservation of our country, but to this internationalist dream and this idea of merging Mexico and the United States and Canada? What can you, the average person, like you and I, do?
Well, I told you before, I ran for office twice, for the Republican nomination for U.S. Senate. And right now, I'm concentrating my efforts on the presidential election in 2008. What we have to do is put someone in the office, in the executive office. We have more than enough laws. The question is enforcement. And obviously what you said is just true, that George Bush has not enforced the laws on immigration. He has not protected the borders, and he has been derelict in his duty up to the point, I think, of almost criminal conspiracy to violate the laws.
Well, I certainly think that he has knowingly and intentionally betrayed his oath of office to defend our Constitution because he serves a different master. He doesn't believe in America as a sovereign nation. He believes in this globalist dream.
Well, whatever his beliefs are, what we know is that, you know, I mean, it's very hard to discern, but what we can see is his actions. And his actions have been to let, you know, 12 million people into the country, if not more, who are illegal. So I think the big question is, who do we get into office? And we have some candidates out there that are currently the big three, McCain, Giuliani, and Gingrich, who are all just terrible on immigration. And I think, you know, one thing that they have to do is be eliminated out of the running very quickly.
But, you know, Paul, until the American people understand, until there's a resurgence of this conservative American organization, certainly our conservative organizations have been totally neutralized. Our Christian organizations are totally neutralized. And how are we going to mobilize the people and get them to vote for a good man, even if we had one running?
Well, I think the question is that we're not as neutralized as we seem. I think, you know, we've kind of, if you looked back 4 years ago, I mean, we were heading for a total calamity. Okay, the 2006 election was sort of a draw. I mean, between the Republicans wanting the Iraq policies, a mixture of bad economy, free trade, and other things, the Republicans got a good kick in the head. But at least it's in a neutral situation, okay? I don't think, you know, I think that what we're going to have is a stalemate for 2 years. I don't think the Democrats really want to pass any immigration reform, comprehensive immigration, meaning letting the illegal in, because they're looking to win in 2008, and they ran a lot of candidates on immigration control. A lot of Democrats won on a very conservative platform. So I think we're going to have a stalemate, and then we're going to have to see what happens in 2008. And then we got to get our bucks together and our people together and really work to get a good candidate there.
But of course, when they control the media, they'll do that to any Republican candidate, but they did to Goldwater in 64. I mean, they'll ridicule him, they'll have a group of psychiatrists say he's got to be crazy to be want to control the border and stop immigration. He doesn't understand how the world runs. He probably wants to plunge us into a depression by cutting off globalism. I mean, when they control the media, how can we reach the average American and get him to understand what's really at stake, and that is the future of our freedom?
I think, you know, I look at the state of Connecticut, and we had five people run for office, and three of them were Republicans. And the two Republicans that lost had the weakest immigration records, and Christopher Shays had the strongest. I think the way people see through the baloney, you know. The average voter does not follow politics every day, you know. I mean, he doesn't read it as closely as we do. And he doesn't pay attention to as much of the left-wing media. The other thing, too, is that we have, you know, the radio stations, we have Fox News, we have CNN, and Lou Dobbs. And so people pretty much know what's going on about immigration. And secondly, many of the people who don't follow the politics, the voters, the blue-collar guys who are being affected by this, the home contractors, the people who've lost jobs, the people who don't, you know, have the second job that they used to and so forth, they don't read the papers, but they know what's happening to them, and they can see the illegals in their town, and they're going to vote for candidates, I think, who want strong immigration control.
Well, how did Chris Shea do in the November election?
Chris Shea won. And just by a hair, and the reason he won was that all of the small towns, small Republican towns voted for him, but then he lost a big margin in the towns such as Bridgeport, Stanford, and Norwalk, where he usually had a good margin. He lost that margin, and those are the three towns that are most affected by illegal immigration. So I think Chris Shays, you know, won on the basis of immigration. He's a good candidate in a lot of ways, and he's a very popular guy. A popular person. So he had that going for him. But I think kind of immigration saved his neck.
All right, now did he win the Congress or Senate?
Congress. He ran for Congress.
Okay,
he's a long-term congressman. I think he's been in there about 20 years.
All right, fine. So he had certainly was there a lot of opposition to him? In other words, did the Democrats throw everything at him?
Yes. Yes, Diane Farrell ran against them, and they spent millions to try to get Chris Shays out of there, and they were not successful. Had the Democrats held the same margins that they had in these big cities that are impacted by illegal immigration, they would have won. But I think a lot of voters, Democratic voters, they couldn't pull the lever for Chris Shays, but they didn't like what the Democratic position was. They just didn't show up. And that's the reason Chris Shays won. Those are sort of the blue-collar, Reagan Democrats that couldn't vote for a Democrat that wanted more immigration.
But don't you think that one of the big issues is going to be the war? Certainly, don't you think that was the major issue in 2006? Certainly, immigration is important, but I think the war was the thing that really got so many people to vote Democratic who never would have voted Democratic before.
I think that was part of it. I think it was a real dissatisfaction with the whole Republican approach to it, because the war was certainly something which was Bush kept talking about wanting to win. Win what? What constitutes winning? You know, I mean, trying to and people began to realize that Iraq has degenerated into just a civil war that we can't do anything to solve. Armies aren't meant to solve civil wars between factions. I think that had part of it, and immigration was, well, I think the war was 60% and 40% was the immigration issue.
All right, fine. Well, I think immigration is a very important issue because I've always said that, to our listeners, that what's happening in the Middle East, as tragic it is a diversion. And while our boys go overseas to fight, we're losing our freedom here at home. We're being invaded with the help of people in Washington, D.C.
Right. Well, one of the things that we used to say about the Vietnam War, Vietnamese War isn't being fought in California, and the Iraq War is not an invasion of the U.S. homeland. And whether people come carrying guns or they just come to occupy your territory without guns, they're still invaders. They still have come here with the purposes of taking jobs that belong to Americans and disrupting our social and economic life, and we have to face that. I mean, I don't mean to trivialize the war in Vietnam, but we can handle that because we have a big economy and we're a very wealthy nation. And it's not going to affect us in the long run, but if you put 20 million people in your country and then they have children and you have another 40 or 60 million, you're going to basically change the nature of the U.S.
But don't you think that's really the purpose of the people who are pushing this idea of making everybody who's here legal, in other words, amnesty for the illegals?
I don't think... I think they're really two different groups. I think there is like a world order group and so forth at a very high intellectual level. And then I think you have the more pragmatic Republicans who just want cheap labor. And then thirdly, you have the pragmatic Democrats who want votes, So I think all three forces are working against it. And they're all working against the middle class American who doesn't want anything to do with all this stuff.
But who do you think really holds the power in Washington, D.C.? Do you think it's the people who want cheap labor? Do you think it's the people who want the votes? Or do you think it's the globalists who control the presidency and can really have such tremendous power that is the major thing?
I think it's the people who want cheap labor and the Democrats who want the votes. The Democrats see the more minorities that they have and the more people that they have beholden to them, the better off they are. I think they're the ones that really win. There might be an ideological component to it, and I'm certain there is, but ideology isn't backed by money. It doesn't get very far, and the Republicans back it with money.
But who's putting up the money? I mean, is it the employers
people? You see the Chamber of Commerce. You see all these organizations. Every time there's an election, you see them start funding candidates that who want quote comprehensive immigration reform. I mean, it's the businesses. It's large businesses, small businesses also, but not quite as much. You see the meat packers, the fast food companies, and all those want cheaper labor. I mean, the price of the cost of a McDonald's doesn't go down when they use minimum wage labor as opposed to paying a market rate.
But of course, the thing is that they couldn't get away with this. There wouldn't be a problem if the federal government was enforcing the laws and the people who sworn to uphold our laws were enforcing them. And that is the thing that disturbs me. We've got people who hold the reins of power in Washington, D.C., who are lawbreakers. And nobody has the courage to call that because they're betraying our country, they're betraying future generations, We're going to end up with a multicultural, multilingual society and chaos.
Some people believe a group of wealthy men control political parties, the American media, and the wealth of our nation. Is this true? Dr. Stanley Monteef spent 40 years studying secret societies and subversive movements. He lived in Africa for 3 years, and when he returned home, he studied the writings of the men who shaped the modern world. His book, Brotherhood of Darkness, identifies the people who control the world and the organizations they created. Dr. Monteef exposes the movement behind Rhodes scholarships, the origin of the Council on Foreign Relations, and the myths surrounding communism. He discusses the goal of all covert organizations, so if you read Brotherhood of Darkness, you will learn a secret that has been passed down through the centuries. When you learn this secret, you will understand what the future holds and what you must do to help preserve our nation. Call and order your copy. 877-300-7645. Only $12.95. That's 877-300-7695.
More than 700 chemicals have been found in our drinking water. And did you know that you can have greater exposure to these chemicals by taking hot showers than when you drink the water? That's because many chemicals are inhaled when they evaporate, and others are absorbed through the skin. The KDF shower filter is designed to reduce chlorine, lead, mercury, and iron, and it inhibits the growth of bacteria, mold, algae, and fungus in your shower. The media is non-toxic, environmentally sound, and is recyclable. The KDF shower filter will typically last 10,000 gallons or 1 year, whichever comes first. Hospitals, restaurants, and water treatment facilities use this media to reduce chlorine, iron, heavy metals, and bacteria. What about you? Order your KDF shower filter, normally $49, for our special price of only $35, a $14 savings. Call now to order at 1-888-803-4438. Order today and save $14 by calling 1-888-803-4438.
Ted Anderson from Midas, December 22nd, 2006, gold 619, ounce gold coins are at 639.64, 322.37 for half, 161.19 for quarter ounce coins. That's 639.64, 322.37, and 161.19. 1971, Nixon closes the gold window, fiat currency. 1920s, the German mark explodes from 75 to 23 trillion. 1995, gold doubles against the Mexican peso. 1997, gold increases 82% over the Indonesian rupee. 1998, gold jumps 2/3 over the Russian ruble. 2002, the Argentine peso loses 1/5 of its value to gold. 2006, the last superpower, the USA's mighty dollar, loses over 1/2 to gold and other raw goods. Could government let this happen? Without immediate backing, how much will it lose? Midas has Nick Bereshef's report covering the loss of purchasing power, fat tail events, bull market economic vulnerabilities, and gold-oil relationship. You've lost 1/2 of your purchasing power. Call 800-686-2237 before the rest disappears. That's 800-686-2237.
Are you concerned about the high cost of prescription drugs? Since January of 2006, RxDrugCard.com members have saved an average of $33 per prescription filled. That's over 46% savings. The average savings for generic drugs was over 71%. RxDrugCard.com is the only major discount prescription drug plan that offers a price lookup page, so you can get an idea of your discounted price before you enroll. RxDrugCard.com is for anyone who pays for their own prescriptions. There are no age restrictions, all prescriptions are covered, and 95% of all pharmacies in the U.S. participate, including Walmart, Walgreens, CVS Pharmacy, and many more. With RxDrugCard.com, you will save immediately with no messy forms or paperwork. Membership fees start at only $4.50 per month and include a 30-day unconditional money-back guarantee. Visit us at www.rxdrugcard.com or call us at 888-216-2461. That's 888-216-2461. Do it today.
Well, Dr. Stan here, our guest is Paul Streitz, and Paul, why don't you tell our listeners what your plan is, because I understand that you feel that you know somebody who could run, who would be an honest man running. Certainly, I agree with you, we certainly don't want John McCain, we certainly don't want Giuliani, we certainly don't want Newt Gingrich. All of them are established, all of them would sell their soul and would sell out America, because none of them, in my estimation, have their loyalty here to this country. So who are you suggesting, and how can we get him elected?
Well, first of all, I'm going to have to get your book because I see some of the practical effects of this, but I think I need to know a little more what's going on behind it.
So well, you give me a call and I'll be
and, order your book over online or wherever I can find it.
You give me a call and I'll be glad off the air and we'll be glad to send you one.
Great.
I want to get in the hands of leaders.
I think you're absolutely right. McCain, Giuliani, and Gingrich are really establishment Republicans who would you know, twist the words comprehensive immigration reform, road to citizenship, all that, but basically can continue this mass illegal immigration into the United States. The next candidate coming down the line is Mitt Romney, and he sort of seems like a moderate. But actually in Massachusetts, he's done very little to solve the immigration problem. And what I mean is enforce the laws. Because an illegal immigrant who works in a state using false identification, false tax ID numbers, etc., is violating state laws as well as federal laws, and so are the employers. So a governor has a lot of power to enforce state laws. Plus governors, and this is a misapprehension on the part of conservatives, they can enforce federal laws. They can arrest illegals. They can arrest employers. They can arrest people for illegal documentation, etc. And Mitt Romney has done nothing about that, and he sort of put up a smokescreen about being strong on immigration, but he's done nothing. I think I look towards a couple people who might... one is Tom Tancredo. I think he would do a terrific job. He's not a nationally recognized figure as the others are, but he certainly has strong support of all the people in the immigration movement. And the other person I think has done an excellent job in immigration, although he's not considered likely, would be Lou Dobbs. I think Lou Dobbs has a really good grasp of the issues. What I think we have to do in the immigration movement is get somebody who's on our side of the fence to begin with and just not take one of these other sort of governors floating out there in Kansas and so forth and say, oh, well, maybe he'll be good on immigration. We need a strong candidate right from the start.
All right, I agree with you totally, and I believe it. I believe, though, that the key is to reach the American people with the truth so they can see the big picture rather than, you know, just the one little issue that they're concerned about. And certainly I believe that immigration...
is that the public doesn't see how immigration affects other issues. For example, people say, well, what about my Social Security? And we got to plan for Social Security. But what are you planning for? Are you planning for a nation of 300 million? Or are you planning for a nation for 450 million? Half of them, you know, one-third of them, 150 million, are going to be low-income people coming in who are going to be heavily dependent on government services. They don't see, for example, they say, well, we need better education for our children. But if you start having a massive illegal immigration, your education bill is just going to absolutely skyrocket. So immigration impacts everything, but everything doesn't impact immigration. And that's what we're trying to make people aware of, and that's what people are seeing more now.
Well, I said, we see it carried forward into crime. We see what's happening to our hospitals.
Absolutely. But I think we're gonna have a year of real debate on this thing. And I think what we do in the immigration movement is when candidates appear, we're going to be there in New Hampshire. We're going to be there in Connecticut. We're going to be there in other states. Remember, we got a very wide spectrum of people. I mean, there are state organizations in Virginia and Texas and California and so forth. So I don't think candidates are going to be able to go around to any of these public meetings and not have immigration protests and not have immigration brought up and stuck in their face.
Well, of course, one of the big problems, they say, well, anybody who is against, you know, immigration is a racist because you're against it because they're Spanish and you hate Spanish people. And, you know, so many people back down when they're viciously attacked by that. How are you going to get people to have the courage to stand up and say the truth? This has nothing to do with race.
After the 15th time you've been called a racist, it doesn't bother you so much.
I know,
most people, you know, that I know in the immigration movement handle that very well. And what I usually say is, look, you have no logical argument. You know, Mexico protects its border, Argentina protects its border, Brazil protects its border. We want to protect our border. You don't have any logical argument, and the only thing you're doing is now slandering the people who want to enforce our laws.
Just call them names, and that's what they always do when they don't have an argument.
Right, that's it. And most people now, I mean, that has its impact in the beginning, but after a while, I mean, everybody's kind of grown tired. I think the American public is tired of everybody calling everybody racist. It's like in the 50s, everybody was called a communist who wasn't a communist, etc. And, you know, and people just grow tired of it. It doesn't have any impact anymore.
All right, we're going to be back here in just a moment with Paul, and we'll invite your calls here at Radio Liberty.
If you would like a copy of this show, come to GCNLive.com and reserve it today. Or call toll-free 877-300-7645.
It's a fact. You can legally eliminate credit card debt, which has been fraudulently created by the banks. Since its creation in 1913, the Federal Reserve has not been held responsible for its own debt. So why should you, the hardworking American, be harassed for yours? There's a double standard when it comes to being responsible for debt, and unlike the Federal Reserve, the people of this country can't print more money when needed. Day of Jubilee has created a successful program designed for people that want to stop harassing calls and threatening letters from bill collectors. We also do credit restoration. Join the thousands of Americans who now breathe a sigh of relief because they have legally eliminated their credit card debt instead of living each day in fear. It's time to turn your life around. Call Day of Jubilee, open 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. Central Standard Time at 920-293-8024. That's 920-293-8024, and ask for Robert. Don't wait any longer to get your life back in order.
Do you know where the 78 potentially active volcanoes in U.S. are located? And do you know the locations of the top 300 prime terrorist targets? You can find these answers and more in the new interactive CD book, Prudent Places USA. With the more than 50 interactive parameters, you can pinpoint natural and man-made disaster areas, brewing environmental catastrophes, the safest cities, the best places for solar and wind energy, and much, much more. Complete with 3 gigabytes of detailed information on each of 3,000-plus counties in the U.S., including 550 high-resolution full-color maps and full-color photographs, as well as detailed information and analysis to help you zero in on the best places to live, the ideal location for cabins and vacation homes, as well as safe and unsafe areas. Get Prudent Places USA for only $29 plus shipping by calling New Millennium at 888-803-4438. That's 888-803-4438 to order on the web or at BerkeyWater.com.
Did you ever wonder how an opera singer that hits a high note is able to shatter a wine glass? Well, the glass has a natural resonance. If the resonant frequency force making the glass vibrate is big enough, the size of the vibration will become so large that the glass shatters. Using a similar principle, Royal Raymond Rife discovered that disease organisms can be destroyed using different resonant frequencies. The BioSolutions frequency instrument uses the same technology for relief or elimination of pain and disease conditions with no side effects. The 2006 BioSolutions Plus is the easiest to operate frequency instrument ever developed. Its easy reference guide will allow you to begin using the instrument within minutes. Simple step-by-step instructions using pictures are easy to follow. Customer satisfaction is guaranteed or your money back. Don't just treat symptoms, eliminate the cause. For more information, call BioSolutions toll-free 1-866-885-6625. That's 1-866-885-6625. 1-866-885-6625.
Here at the Genesis Communication Network, and our guest is Paul Streitz. Paul, would you like to get your website and telephone number or anything else out?
Yeah. One thing I think people would like to sign up and stay abreast of what the presidential elections are, it would be AmericaFirst2008.com, AmericaFirst2008.com, and you can sign up there on our, you know, email list, and we're going to be keeping track very closely of the presidential elections and what's coming up.
All right, fine. And of course, who do you think is going to be the Democratic candidate?
I have no idea.
Well, let me for our listeners out there, just keep your eyes on.
I don't even know who's going to be the Republican candidate. I think it's going to be a real fight for the Republicans. I can talk more about that. I think if people like John McCain or Giuliani or Gingrich come in with these immigration platforms, I think a good part of the Republican Party is just going to walk on them. I don't think Phyllis Schlafly and some of the other conservatives are going to let happen what happened with Bush, that is to have sort of a wolf in sheep's clothing come in and then just refuse to ignore all our laws.
All right, fine. Well, it's going to be a fascinating year as this thing begins to play itself out. And, of course, you mentioned Duncan Hunter as a possible candidate. What are your thoughts about Duncan?
I followed him, and I gave him a call to his campaign headquarters. I don't know if it's presidential, but just his ongoing House of Representatives headquarters to find out what he's doing. And while he has declared himself a presidential campaign candidate, he doesn't seem to have a website up for the presidency. And he, on the other hand, I've seen him on TV, you know, walking around and so forth, looking like a candidate. So it's kind of hard to know what he's going to do. I think he's a very strong candidate and strong on the immigration issues, but he doesn't have, you know, national following. He's not known as a national figure at that time. It's awareness of him. He'd have to build that, and he'd have to get a lot of money to do it.
Well, of course, the other thing is, of course, the media can totally ignore them. I mean, you could have an excellent candidate running, and if the media gave him the conspiracy of silence, nobody would ever hear of him.
Well, one of the things of our system, though, is New Hampshire is very small, and South Carolina is relatively small. And if you, and especially New Hampshire, is a very much door-to-door sort of salesmanship, okay? People don't vote you in New Hampshire unless they've seen you, you've talked at a local meeting, they got a feel for the candidates and so forth. It's a very personal. It's not California, it's not Texas, you know, it's not Florida, it's a small state. So if you can do well there, if you can take a Tom Tancredo or Lou Dobbs or Duncan Hunter and go in and get 25% or 30% of the vote, you know, get a substantive amount of the vote, you can be off and running. And the same thing is true with South Carolina. So you don't have to win the war in the first battle, you know. I mean, you've got to go in and fight the first battle. So I think it's possible to run a real strong immigration control candidate. And I want to say one other thing, too. The other issue that affects everybody is free trade and the loss of blue-collar jobs, the loss of manufacturing jobs. And I think, for example, Newt Gingrich is very, weak on that. He was one of the architects of NAFTA, which has been a complete disaster. So I think there's some opportunities for a strong, nationalistic, patriotic candidate in 2008.
All right, fine. Well, because aren't they going to have to address the issue of the war, too? And so I think anybody who comes out and is in favor of where we have probably been by 2 years from now will be at war with Iran and with the whole Muslim world. I mean, if you don't address that issue, if you don't have a candidate who's willing to address it, I think that the Democrats are going to have real fun with him.
I think the Democrats are going. I think the Democrats don't have a strategy, because on one hand they position themselves as being very much against the war going into 2006, but on the other hand, if a complete chaos ensues in Iraq, they don't want to be held responsible for it. And so you've got to have someone strong who's going to take the responsibility for what happens. And I don't think it's our responsibility to establish a peaceful government, democracy, or anything else. Now, that's my position, but.
Well, I agree with you totally. In fact, I think we never should have gone in. And but you know, when you're already in, you better get out, because you're not going to solve anything. But whoever runs for president as a Republican in the year 2008, I think he's got to be willing to stand up and say, you know, we were betrayed by our previous leaders, and they can't be like, of course, George Bush with Bill Clinton, who said, "Oh shucks, you know, Bill may be a scumbag, but we're not going to do it. We're not even going to be worried about all the things he stole from the White House. You know, let's just start afresh and go on from here. Good old Bill Clinton."
Well, Eisenhower once said, and I've looked for this quote, but I remember it very distinctly. It's easier to get the first person in than the last person out. And that's always a problem. Okay, but I think we solved the problem, Hussein is his threat to us as it existed. But the question is, are we continually, now that we've gone into Iraq, responsible for being there and solving their problems for the rest of our natural days? And I don't think so. I think, you know, it's up to the Iraqis to solve their own problems.
Okay, well, our telephone number is 1-888-259-5791. That's 1-800-259-5791. And of course, Paul is on the front lines of trying to get a good candidate to run in 2008, and feeling that a very important issue will be immigration, and I agree with him. I think it's a very important issue. And then, of course, he feels that the loss of jobs is an important issue. But that gets into globalism, which really gets into, in my estimation, of the whole immigration issue. This is all simply one ball of wax.
It is one ball of wax. I must say that that's one thing that immigration and free trade are different sides of the same coin. And that coin is replacing American labor with cheap labor from abroad, either by importing the goods made abroad or by importing the labor directly. And what you have is a race to the bottom by the middle class and lower income groups. And what you've seen over the past 10, 20 years is the wealthier have gotten wealthier and the middle class has stayed stagnant. And that's because of our cheap labor policies, and immigration is one of the two of them.
And I think you're absolutely right, and I like that term, a race to the bottom, because that's exactly where we're headed.
Brother, are we? I mean, Alexander Hamilton would not never have approved of that. And one of the things that's really, everybody keeps saying, oh, we have a protectionist economy, like protectionism is a bad thing. Alexander Hamilton always had a protected economy. That's what you want. You want to protect people's jobs. I mean, the job of the government is to protect people from foreign invaders, from the flu, from insecurity, and many things. And so why are jobs then up for grabs from anyone from China to take it, or anybody coming across the border to take a job? That's a person's livelihood. That's a direct threat to their lives.
And, of course, we're doing that. I mean, we're taking away the jobs of the people who work in the automotive industry and the furniture industry and the manufacturing industry and in so many aspects. I mean, our jobs are leaving here rapidly. We've already lost over, you know, a third, at least, I think, 3 million manufacturing
Absolutely. Jobs
here.
It's incredible. I went back and looked at the history of great societies such as either Spain or the Italians during the Middle Ages or England prior to the 1900s. And when you start when you go into free trade becomes extremely destructive. It destroys your society. Two of the biggest supporters of free trade, by the way, were Karl Marx and Engels.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if you knew that, because what they saw was that free trade takes an established society, a wealthier society, and destroys it, and eventually you get, poverty and chaos, and that would then becomes the opportunity for takeover of the proletariat and all that good stuff. But, you know, and what we see is what's happening.
And I think you're absolutely right. I think we're seeing a history, unfolding before us, with a failed policy, and the trouble is that I don't think the people in Washington, D.C. are stupid at all. I think they know exactly what they're doing.
One of the things that you saw in this last election is that every single Democrat ran against free trade. There wasn't any Democrat supporting free trade. We may be in an ironic position of the Republicans being the free traders and the Democrats being against free trade. So I don't think any Republican who wants to win an office in 2008 is going to go out and start waving the banner of free trade and NAFTA and how wonderful this is going to be. Americans know that, had the practical experience of this, it does not work. It's a disaster. And in these big states, like Ohio, Michigan, Illinois, those big central states where industry is key to their survival, the Republicans took a bath, and they took a bath on the issues of free trade.
And I agree with you totally. Our telephone number is 1-800-259-5791. That's 1-800-259-5791. And if we don't get tariffs here, well, you can forget about the living standards of the middle class. We'll have a two-class society just like they have in Mexico. Whether you have a few people of great wealth, you'll have a massive bureaucracy, a very powerful police and military to keep the people in line, and then everybody else impoverished.
Right. Well, a free trade society is essentially a confederate society, where there's a small group of elite people who make a lot of money, a very impoverished middle class, as there was in the Confederacy, and then very, very poor people on the bottom. And what we're doing through immigration is we're supplying the people on the bottom. We're not exactly slaves, but they're sort of like indentured servants who come here and work at the lowest possible wages.
Well, Chris, my concern is that probably by 2 years from now, why, of course, we're going to have probably a lot fewer jobs. There are going to be a lot of Mexicans over here, you know, that have come in illegally, and they want a job. They want to be able to support themselves and their families. And if those jobs are suddenly aren't there, what are they going to do? Are they going to go home? Are they going to begin to riot in the streets? Are we going to see a civilian unrest? I think that there are people in Washington, D.C. who are concerned about that. That's why they have just put out $38 million to rejuvenate those Japanese concentration camps from 1941 and 42, and given $385 million to Halliburton to build detention camps. Why would they be doing that unless they know something we don't know?
I don't know, but I think what you can say is eventually it may come the situation where that it actually you will have fewer immigrants and illegal immigrants coming in from Mexico and South America because the living standard of the United States falls, and so it's no longer desirable to come in here. You just run out of cheap labor jobs to do, and you just get so filled with it that the wages keep getting depressed and depressed, because what you see now is guys who used to make $50 a day doing illegal labor, as you increase the number of them, it goes down to 40, it goes down to 30, it comes down to, you know, minimal survival rate wage, and when that happens, then the influx will be smaller. But again, I think the American people are awake to these things. When I started this thing 2 years ago or 3 years ago, everybody was saying, "Oh, illegal immigrants! It's really great for the economy. It's wonderful, you know, multiculturalism, etc." You don't see the papers, even the most liberal papers, touting that anymore. What they're saying is, "Oh, it's disruptive. People can't go home. The economy would collapse." Well, of course, the economy is not going to collapse. The economy would be much better off without illegals.
All right, we've got Tom calling from Ohio. Tom, did you have a question for our guest?
Yeah. Abolition of private property, heavy progressive income tax, abolition of all rights of inheritance, confiscation of property of all immigrants and rebels, central bank, government control of communications and transportation, government ownership of factories and agriculture, government control of labor, corporate farms, regional planning, government control of education.
And we got most of those things. That comes right out of the Communist Manifesto. The
did I cover it all, Dr. Stan?
You did. That's the 10 points in the Communist Manifesto. And it's amazing how many we've adopted. In fact, if Norman Thomas, the head of the American Socialist Party, said, you know, there's a lot more socialism in the United States than there ever was in either Russia or China, and he's right on. Oh, and so we got real problems, Tom. Anything else you'd like to say?
I don't know what else to say, Dr. Stan.
I've gone from being like a philosopher to being more pragmatic about it. And I think there are a couple weaknesses that we as activists have to do. One is, I think you have to get boots on the ground. You know, like you have to join an immigration movement. You have to join your local join FAIR, join eNumbers USA. You have to be an activist. You have to be willing to make telephone calls. If there's a demonstration there, you got to get your boots up on Saturday morning and get out there. That's the first thing. And secondly, most democracy is not free. And what I mean by not free is not just some, you know, flag waving, but if you see candidates who are support, you know, that you support, you know, on issues, you know, send Tom Tancredo $10. Send, you know, Colby $10. It adds up. Those small amounts add up. Too many, I think, people, especially middle-class people who have never really participated in the process, think that everything is going to kind of work out and it's all free and my $20 doesn't count. Well, if you go to a church, when you really attend a church, you put money on the plate every Sunday, and you've got to put money on the plate for the candidates you support.
I agree with you. Okay, let's go to Ari, who's calling us. Hi, Ari. How are you?
Hi, Dr. Stan.
I have a question for our guest.
Well, I do, but it's not totally with the subject, but I was on the Internet today, and first of all, I want to ask your guest, he said something, and he says, and I'd like to have him repeat that, he said something to the effect that it's easier to get the first one in than the last one out. Is that what he said?
Right.
Okay. And, when you said that, something sparked in my mind, and it's sometimes you have to think like they think in order to, you know, find out what they're doing. And,
Well, Well, what I meant by is in former wars, I mean, in wars fought past and not particularly wars about the U.S. for, you know, they'd go in and destroy the enemy and leave and just leave ruin and carnage and everything there. But the problem with the United States is that when it gets involved in a war, it then feels it's responsible for cleaning up all the mess and so forth, and it must restore restore the country that, you know, where it fought. Part of that was good sense in Europe, because Europe was completely devastated after World War II, and so was Japan, and there wasn't any sense of, you know, just leaving them there for another fascist government to start. But on the other hand, how responsible are we? Do you know what I mean? So that's why it's hard for us to just walk in, accomplish our objectives, and walk back out.
And, of course, we've still got our troops stationed in Germany. We've still got our troops stationed in Japan. We've still got our troops stationed in South Korea. Maybe that's what we really intend in the Middle East. Ari, did you have something else you wanted to say?
Yes, I was on the Internet today, and I found this article on American Free Press, and it's entitled China Has the Most Money on the Planet, and it has something to do with the war in Iraq. And it says that $30 and $80 million, the two big numbers at the end of the world and the end of the world as we've known it. The first number is the rate, $30 million. $30 million China is adding to its reserves of foreign currencies, mostly dollars, every hour. And the second number, $80 million, is the rate at which America's capital, as measured by the current account, is being depleted, also by the hour. That's astounding.
Absolutely, and this is the free trade myopia, and I've written an article on Milton Friedman, the world's worst economist, you know, who's led us down this disastrous path. And
there's another thing I wanted to touch on just real quick.
Okay, we're out of time. Thanks very much. And, Paul, I want to thank you so very much for being with us. God bless. We'll talk to you later, okay?
It was a pleasure talking to you. Talk
thank
to you again,
so
Doctor.
Much. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Okay, we'll be back in just a moment to wrap up today's program.
This is Pastor David Whitney with Institute on the Constitution. Our founders constructed this constitutional republic with the intent that citizens would function as the final check on the power of civil government. But that design would only work if the citizens understood our form of government as well as their responsibilities within that structure. That's why Institute on the Constitution has put together a host kit that enables anyone, anywhere, with any group of people to instruct them on our founding documents. We urge you to order a host kit. You can call us toll-free at 866-730-9796. That's 866-730-9796. Or you can order it on the web. Go to our website, iotconline.com. The only way our republic will survive is if its citizens arm themselves with the knowledge of our founding fathers' original intent of the Constitution, the Declaration, and the Bill of Rights. Call us, 866-730-9796.
The war on terrorism, will it be fought overseas or will it affect us here at home? If you are like most folks, you want to be prepared but can't afford an underground shelter. So what do you do? Did you know that you can use your home as a shelter against fallout and biological or chemical attacks? With a little know-how, it's not that difficult. Sheltering in place, surviving acts of terrorism from biological, chemical, and radioactive fallout, developed by Wayne LeBaron, a health physicist who has served as a specialist in environmental health, communicable diseases, and has worked as a nuclear specialist for the U.S. government, gives you easy-to-follow video instructions and walks you step-by-step through the process of preparing your home as a shelter. Get this critical video every American needs for only $29 plus shipping. Order by calling New Millennium today at 888-803-4438. That's 888-803-4438. Or order on the web at BerkeyWater.com.
Hey ladies, if you love to shop, then visit HerbalHealer.com to browse through their online catalog. You'll find thousands of effective, alternative, and natural products for you and the whole family. Besides the amazing products you'll find, this shopping is guilt-free because you're investing in your health, and your health is priceless. While online, sign up to receive the Herbal Healer newsletter, which will keep you informed on the latest and greatest products in education. Did you know that Herbal Healer offers not only natural medicine, but also tension-relieving herbal teas, cookbooks, aromatherapy, products for pampering, and more great products to help you soothe and relax after a long day. Want to learn more for yourself and to help others in the future? Join the Herbal Healer Correspondence Program. You can work at your own pace from the comfort of your own home. This accredited, exciting program can help you gain skills and knowledge. Can you believe you can find all this at one stop? HerbalHealer.com, celebrating 18 years of dedication.
This is Dr. Stan back here at the Genesis Communication Network. Let me just mention that as of the 15th of January, why we are going to be changing our shortwave, and you'll be able to get our afternoon program, that's this program at 9.480, that's 9.480, and our evening program at 5.755, that's 5.755, and that the program we do 8 to 10 in the evening on the West Coast and 11 to 1 on the East Coast, so please get the information out. And then, of course, to really understand what's going on today, if you need to read my book, Brotherhood of Darkness, you need to get our four-tape set on the secret government, or our four-tape set on secret societies, or better still, to get our secret government special. Certainly, these are tapes and videos that get into the secret societies that are there. If you don't believe there is an occult hierarchy, there is another dimension that is really managing so much of what's going on, dedicated to this idea of a new world government, and of course the destruction of Christian civilization, destruction of Christianity, creating a new world religion. You need to read my pamphlets on the occult hierarchy. There's three of them. They're only $9.95 for all three, but it'll give you a grasp of what the people on the other side are saying. It's a compilation of my newsletters, really about 15 of the newsletters on the occult. Some of them I wrote. Some of them are written by our good friend, Dr. Dennis Cuddy. But you need to have the information so that you can discuss this intelligently. There is another dimension. A recent study of the youth of America showed almost three-quarters of them have been involved in one way or another with the occult, into Ouija boards or, you know, into witchcraft or into studying the supernatural. And it is there. It's very real. And we're losing a whole generation of our young people because our churches are not warning against this, and because we've taken God out of our schools. And if you don't have God to guide you, people have to have something. They're looking for something, and there is another dimension. They tap into that, and they begin to get all sorts of power. They actually will begin to get rewarded for doing what they're told to do, not realizing, of course, that they are truly demonically possessed. If you haven't yet seen the videos, they sold their souls for rock and roll. They sold their souls for rock and roll, the 3-hour, the 4-hour, the 10-hour version, where they're available through Radio Liberty, the videos, or DVDs on Megiddo 1 and Megiddo 2. Certainly, we hope that you'll want to get Pastor Joe Schimmel's latest production, and he did they sold their souls for rock and roll videos, but his latest one is, of course, the Da Vinci Con, not the Da Vinci Code, but the Da Vinci Con, going into the Gnostic influence. What's Gnosticism? Well, of course, you'll learn when you actually see these DVDs. It's called the Da Vinci Con, and it's a great entertainment, and you'll begin to understand the motion pictures you've seen. In fact, some of them, I'll have to admit, I saw, and I didn't understand. I got the wrong message without understanding the Gnostic overtones. So, and then, of course, you really need to get some of my interviews with Pastor Joe Schimmel as we take you into Gnosticism, as we take you into this supernatural dimension that is there. So, you know, our telephone number, 1-800-544-8927, 1-800-544-8927. We've got all sorts of great new four-tape sets on globalism. We've got them certainly on almost every aspect of what's going on. And you can simply give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. We'll be glad to send you a catalog, or go up on the Internet, and they're all listed there at our website at RadioLiberty.com. That's RadioLiberty.com. Remember, you can listen to our programs 3 hours a day at RadioLiberty.com, and 2 hours a day, certainly on RBN Live, or you can go to GCNLive.com, or AmericaNewsNet.com. we have an opportunity to reach out across America. Quite frankly, we need your help, and if you'd like to join the Radio Liberty family and help us, our number again, 1-800-544-8927. And we're going to be back here in just a moment for the next hour with a fascinating program with a Palestinian terrorist right here at Genesis.
Good morning, honey. Wow, the weather.
You're listening to the Global Star Radio Network, located at Telstar 5 KU band, frequency 11836, symbol rate 20770. Thank you for listening.
Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that will determine what the future will bring. I need to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They have to be my views, the views of our guests, and of course we welcome your calls from out across America at 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or that's 1-888-24-LIBERTY, but please hold your calls unless we ask for specific calls. We have with us Walid Shobat. And Walid was a Palestinian. He was involved with terrorism, and he was brought up in the home of a Palestinian home where they really believed, of course, in terrorism and, of course, the destruction of the Jewish nation. Well, Walid today is a Christian and has an entirely different world outlook, and this is really the only solution to the problems in the Middle East today. But we're not doing very much to encourage that today, unfortunately. So, without further ado, Walid, thank you very, very much for being with us.
Thank you for having me.
Now, am I pronouncing your first name right?
Perfect.
All right. Why don't you tell our listeners just a little bit about yourself and about your how it was that you came to become a Christian?
Well, that would take hours, but I will sum it up in 5 minutes. I come from an American mother and Jordanian father. The reason I say Jordanian, because at that time there was no such thing as Palestinian. He served in the Jordanian army, came to the States, married an American. She was 9 months pregnant with myself. She went to the Middle East for a visit. She was not allowed to go back to her country for 35 years. So I grew up as an American citizen, living in the Middle East, in the Palestinian areas. My grandfather, who was friends with Hajj Amin al-Husseini, the Grand Mufti of Jerusalem, and the notorious friend of Adolf Hitler, who called out for the destruction of the Jews. And you see pictures of him in The Evil of the Final Solution with Adolf Hitler. And from my mother's side, I had my great-grandfather, who was friends with Winston Churchill. And so I knew very little about my American side of the family. So growing up in the Middle East, of course, I went to schools in the Middle East, educated in the Islamic system. I remember the Six-Day War happened when I was a young kid. Israel was victorious, of course, when Arab armies charged against Israel. And Israel preempted it in a strike and defeated all these armies. Yet we hated the Jewish people. We hated Israel because it just went against the grain of our religion. So Islamic fundamentalism later on started to grow further from the Muslim Brotherhood infiltrating into the school system and the education system. I ended up, of course, in prison for rioting against Israel, throwing stones at the worshippers at the Wailing Wall. And there I was recruited to plant a bomb in a bank. And I planted a bomb in the bank. It exploded on the roof of the bank. I saw some Arab children walking about the bank. Of course, I smuggled this explosive charges right through the Temple Mount, the holiest place in the world. And there I was smuggled by the Muslim Waqf police, who was supposed to be the protectorate of the Temple Mount facility. And, of course, later on also I got into trouble where I nearly ditched an Israeli soldier. Came to the States after that.
All right, fine. Well, you sort of hang on there for just a minute. Now, we're going to lose a few of our listeners, and then they'll be back in 3 minutes. However, we're going to bring some new ones on here as we bring a major station here in the central coast of California on board. So we'll be just a little repetitive during this next 3 minutes, but don't be concerned about that. Anyway, because I will sort of summarize what you've told us, and then I'll just let you pick it up and go from there. Right here at Radio Liberty. Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty. Our guest this afternoon is Waleed Shobat, who was a Palestinian terrorist. He was raised, his mother was an American who was married to a Jordanian. And they called him Jordanians because, of course, there was no Palestine when he was growing up as a boy. It was these were Jordanian citizens, but, of course, they lived in part of the time very close to Bethlehem. Anyway, he was raised in the Islamic schools where this hatred of the Jews was taught, and of course this belief in the Muslim faith, and of course he was involved with the various terrorist acts, planting bombs and attacking the Israelis. And you actually were sent to prison there for a time?
Yes, but I had immunity since I was a U.S. citizen.
All right.
And my rest of the colleagues went to prison. They got sentenced in terms, but I was a U.S. citizen, of course.
All right. Well, now, how was it that you happened to come to the United States?
I was a U.S. citizen.
All right, fine. And what motivated you? Did you want to get out of there? Were they, of course...
Well, my mother urged my father to send me out of the country. She knew I would be killed if I stay there. So my father agreed. And then later on in 93, I started to examine the Bible. I challenged my wife to convert her to Islam. I had thought that my mother was a Muslim all these years, that she converted to Islam, when in reality she wasn't a Muslim, because I caught her with a Bible one time. In fact, my mother witnessed to me when I was young, as a matter of fact, when I asked her a question, and I said, you know, does the Bible tell you that we will have a Palestinian state? Because that's all I was interested in. She says, well, in Joel chapter 3, it's clear, it says that God will be angry at the world for dividing the land of Israel. So the land of Israel will be divided, but that will be judgment day, you know, when these things will happen and attack Israel. And she told me about these things, but I just didn't believe her, you know.
Well, of course, certainly a woman doesn't have very many rights in the Muslim faith, and she was really not allowed to leave the country there?
She was not allowed for 35 years. I ended up yet rescuing her in 1994. After I became Christian, and I reunited her with her mother.
All right, fine. And so the difficulty is, of course, the Muslim faith is a very all-encompassing faith, requires, of course, tremendous dedication. And if you convert to the Muslim faith and you try to leave, they'll kill you. I mean, that's the way it is. It's easy to get in, but it's pretty hard to get out.
Well, Muhammad, this is why I call it the Hotel California, you know, the song, you can check in, but you can't check out. It's just, you know, Muhammad says even in the ends of times there'll be Muslims who will leave the faith. Kill them wherever you find them. So
hold that thought. We'll be right back here in just a moment with Waleed as we begin to explore the meaning of Islam. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and Waleed was just saying that it's easy to convert to the Muslim faith, but once you're there, why, there's no exit. In other words, if you leave the Muslim faith and you're a Muslim, why, other Muslims are encouraged to kill you, and of course there's nothing wrong with that. The Muslim way of thinking, anybody who tries to leave the faith will be killed. So pick up the story there and how it was that you happened to become a Christian.
Well, when I studied the Bible, when I asked my wife, I said, you know, I asked her to convert to Islam, and she says, why should I leave my Christian faith? And I said to her, the Jews corrupted the Bible. The Bible is a corrupt document, because Muslims believe the Bible is corrupted. And she says, show me the corruptions. If you show me the corruptions, I'll become Muslim. So I went and purchased one for $10. It was a King James Bible. and I began to read it from cover to cover. And as I started reading it, I fell in love with it. Because there was the connection that was missing. And that connection was Israel. The history of Israel was very well documented in the Bible. Because all my life I thought that the Jews were evil, wicked, prophet killers, spread mad cow disease, caused tsunamis, put infertility drugs for the Palestinians so they don't have children. They run the Congress, they run the media, they're, you know, international Zionist conspirators. They came up with, you know, all these claims that we have. And then I began to feel sorry for the Jews for the first time because they made a trip to Israel. And I saw an incident where Palestinians were stoning a Jewish bus in Hebron. And I looked at the bus and I saw it had bars, wire mesh, and bulletproof glass. And I asked myself the question, why are these people not allowed to live amongst us? How come we can live in Israel proper? There's 1.2 million of us living in Israel proper, going to mosques and everything else, but yet we're not allowing them to live amongst us. What is this Palestine that we're creating anyway? It is not a state, really. It's a psychosis. It's a psychosis of nothing but death and mayhem because, you know, my cousin got killed as a terrorist going on his way to plant a bomb in Ben Yehuda Street, and my aunt had a wedding celebration in the streets. And she passed candy, and they had a wedding procession for the martyrs. In fact, I'm writing another book. It's called Why We Want to Kill You. In it, I document all the evidence for the Westerners so they can understand really the nature of the beast. And studying history, and I became in love with history, the Holocaust was reality. First, it was a fabrication, of course. It became a reality. Once it became a reality, I began to ask myself, well, why were they lying to us about the Holocaust? Then I began to understand the persecution that the Bible mentions, the words that Jesus mentioned. They will come to you, they'll chase you from the synagogues. The ones that will come to kill you will be thinking they're doing God a service. In fact, when I ran into Psalm 83, very famous psalm, and most people don't read it, and in Psalm 82, it says, Arise, O Lord, judge the nations. Wow, this is amazing. And in the details of Psalm 83, it talks about the nations that God will destroy for attacking Israel. And it says, Come, they have said, let us cut them off from becoming a nation, that the name of Israel be remembered no more. And it mentions all the nations, the Hagarites, the Ishmaelites, the Assyria, the people of Tyre, which are the Lebanese. And then it talks about the results of the battle, where God defeats those enemies. And I started to ask myself, how could the bad guys be the good guys and the good guys are the bad guys? Because my whole life as a Muslim, they were the bad guys and we were the good guys. I began to understand myself, ask myself serious questions. But I don't understand the triunity of God, this Trinity thing. I don't understand that God is three. I began to understand that Islam as a religion came for one purpose alone, and that is to destroy the concept of the Trinity. As 1 John 2:22 said, Who is the liar? He who denies that Jesus is the Christ. He is Antichrist that denies the Father and the Son. Why were we so vehement about denying Jesus, about denying he was crucified, about denying that God is our Father and God is the Holy Spirit and all these things? I began to understand the footsteps of Satan in history. Once I began to understand the path of Satan, and only the Bible can reveal that to us, I began to understand that I was on the wrong track. So I began to think seriously about my future and about my destiny. Then I was sitting one day and watching a program on TV, and it was This Week in Bible Prophecy, and I turned on the TV and they gave the gospel message, and I was terrified about accepting Christ. I was scared. Yet I said, why don't I try it? What am I afraid of? Let me try this. And I said, come in, Lord Jesus, in my heart. And I did the salvation prayer. And from then, I became active. I started going to churches. I started speaking out. And my family threatened my life. And I lost my land. I lost everything. And I started speaking at the universities, the news media, to the world, all over television. The world hated me for what I started to do. I began to understand that the first crime I've done was to become a Christian. That is a crime in accordance to this world. And I keep going. I understand now fully what Jesus means when he says the ones who will come, they will persecute you and they will kill you. They will do these things to you.
And, of course, the thing is that they really do track down those people who've, who violated their various parts of Sharia law. Certainly the people over in Denmark, the fellow who drew the cartoons, I don't think was very smart to do, but, he had to live in fear of his life. Salman Rushdie still has a contract on his life. I mean, why? Because he wrote something called Satanic Verse, going into really what it really says in the Quran and the Hadith and these other Muslim books. The average American has no idea what the Muslim faith really involves, do they?
Well, the average American does not go back to history. Churchill mentioned very well about the Muslim faith, and several presidents of the United States talked about the Muslim faith. We've had this beast before. It was wounded when the Ottoman Empire was dismantled. And it never ceased to continue to try to reestablish and gain control of the world. And since the 70s, they've been very active. And now we see the end results. It is a global system that wants to take over the whole world. In fact, if you look at all the literal references in the Bible regarding nations that God destroys in the ends of days that are mentioned literally, they're all Muslim. All of them, every single one. Besides, of course, we can debate over Magog being Russia or being Asia Minor. If Asia Minor is the answer, then Turkey is a Muslim country. And if it's intended to be southern Russia, then it's all Muslim countries as well. So we cannot deny the role of Islam in the end of times. I think the ignorance comes from the Christians as well, who have not looked into the scriptures to understand that it's not that God didn't warn us about Islam, that we didn't look any further. I can show you several references, tons of references. I spend 4 hours giving seminars and showing from the Bible the role of Islam in the end of time.
Well, of course, most people really don't believe in the end time scenario, and yet, of course, you read Ezekiel 38 and 39 and see how everything seems to be fitting into place today, and you analyze some of the things that are being said by President Ahmadinejad over there in Iran. He's either the craziest guys in the world or he is being motivated to try to promote a major war in the Middle East. I mean, everything that we're going to, instead of pulling our troops out, we're going to expand the war over there with, I think, frightening implications for America and for the people over there. How can we reach the Muslims, Walid? Because I know that you have a heart for the Muslims.
Well, I think the best way to reach the Muslims is not to focus with them on the false dollar bill, but to focus on the real dollar bill. Instead of insulting them, or instead of, coming out outwardly and telling them that, Allah is not true, Muhammad is not the prophet of God, is to challenge them. Tell them why are they Muslim. Let them tell you why they believe that Allah is the truth and why the Quran is the truth. And then you unleash all the evidence that you have and be prepared to give answers. And once you unleash the evidence, let him decide on his own. Let him contemplate on his own the answer that you've given him, so he can review his spirituality by himself, and he will realize by himself that he's in the wrong path. Give him the evidence for why you believe. Because, of course, faith in the Bible, it's the substance of things hoped for, the evidence of things unseen. So we have things, evidence. The Bible is based on evidence, tremendous amount of evidence. Yet I see easy believism in Christianity, in the churches today. There is very little focus on the doctrine and on the text of the Bible and really studying it. It's sort of becoming just emotional phase. And these things, we are in the midst of a falling away. And the falling away must come first, of course. And that's why Islam arose, because the Christian world have fallen away. And in every country in the world that Christianity fell away from the faith, it was gulped up by Islam. So it's not unlikely that some Western countries will be gulped up by Islam because of our loss of our faith. So the most important thing we need to focus on is to keep the church strong. To keep the church strong and focus on the youth, the next generation of Americans.
I certainly agree with you, and I certainly share your concern about what's happening to the faith today. People are looking for an experiential faith, where they want to walk the labyrinth. They want to experience God rather than to go to His Word and reading. And really, Chris, faith comes through hearing and hearing from the Word of God, and people have forgotten that.
But we have experienced God in a way that every one of us have seen what happens. We experience God as we see Israel being revived. We experience God as we see Jews going back to their homelands. These are fulfillments of things in the Bible. God doesn't just speak to us personally. He speaks to the whole world. Yet we seem not to focus when God speaks to the masses. We want to focus only when God speaks only to us. See, Americans in general are very kind of personal. They want a personal God, but they don't want a God to speak to the universe. That's not the way the Bible is. For God so loved the world that he gave his only begotten Son. So we need to love the world as well.
And we certainly want to accept the fact that we're sinners saved by grace and that we really do need a Savior. We don't want to be told what's wrong with what we're doing. We want to do what we want to do because, after all, we're the determinant of what's right and wrong. And the trouble is, that's not true. If we begin following and do what we want to do, we're going to get into all sorts of problems. And that's the real problem that's going on today. We're going to be back here in just a moment with Waleed Shobat, who's a Palestinian. He was a terrorist, and now he's a Christian. Well, Waleed, why don't you pick up? Because I, of course, watched your video. It's excellent. As you point out, it's certainly how Israel plays such an important part in God's plan for the times in which we're living.
Well, Israel is so crucial. Because if you look even in Isaiah 63, there's a verse in Isaiah 63 that says, "And he suffered as they suffered," which means the Lord himself will suffer as Israel suffered. We look at the sufferings of Israel during the Holocaust, and we see them naked. He was also naked. We see them hungry. He was also hungry. We see them silent in front of their accusers, going to death in silence. We see tons of footage of Jews going to death naked and silent and hungry and all these things. And in the end, in Matthew 25, he says, "For I was hungry, and you didn't give me food. I was naked, you didn't clothe me. I was imprisoned. I was in the ghettos. You didn't visit me. When did you do this? Just as you did this to the least of these, my brethren." I believe he's speaking about Israel. Some people will say, no, he's speaking about the church. Well, again, the issue becomes the brethren. We go to the Micah 5. He does talk about brethren being Israel. They will join the other parts of Israel, the remnant of Israel, and he's called. He directs them as the brethren. We see the parallels between God's suffering and Israel's suffering. We see that God has his hands upon his people. So we see tremendous amount of data in the Bible about Israel coming back to the country, not just from the land, not just from Egypt. You know, the day is coming, saith the Lord, that no longer the children of Israel will say that God has brought the children of Israel out of the land of Egypt, but God has brought the children of Israel out of the land of the north. And out of all the countries where he's driven them, I mean, 100 different nations, the Jews are coming back in unbelief. And then in Ezekiel, it's very clear. He says, then he will pour clean water on them. And they will look upon him, you know. And they will know. They will recognize. So we need to be, as Christians, we need to understand that God is the God of future. He knows the future. We don't. He explains to us the future. So we need to look at Israel as a nation that will... It will give the glory to God in the end, and his kingdom will be established there.
And, you know, I think it's just amazing as you analyze the prophecies, and you see that children of Israel return to the Holy Land, but, you know, this was prophesied so long ago, and the time we would be coming to a cashless society. Never before in history has there been an opportunity for a cashless society, everything being moderated by plastic, and everybody being numbered, and the time coming whether we don't have a number, we won't be able to buy or sell. These things are happening with such rapidity, aren't they?
They are, but although we can dialogue over the mark of the beast and all these things, I have a different perspective on this because I came from a Muslim background. As I mentioned before, all the nations mentioned literally in the Bible that God destroys in the end are Muslim. So how is Islam going to play a role in this? If we look at the different elements that people will put in their foreheads and their right arm, they're not just one element. There's three elements. There's the name, there's the number, and there's the mark. And if you look at the text, it says or, the name or the mark or the number. So it's a different flavors, if you will. Now, what is in the name of the beast? How is this the name of a person? Well, the way to understand the Bible is to allow the Bible to interpret itself.
Hold that thought. We're going to be right back in just a minute as we bring our stations back on board here. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and we're talking with Walid Shobat, and we're talking about suddenly the things that are happening today. And I'd commented, you know, if you analyze the prophecies and the prophecy that the Jews would return to the land of Israel, you know, that was made 2,000 years ago is being fulfilled or has been fulfilled today. The prophecies about the moving towards a cashless society, never before has this been possible. The fact that you time would come, you wouldn't be able to buy or sell. Yes, you had the mark of the beast, and Walid was telling us about his views of what the mark of the beast is, saying it's somewhat different than most. So pick up the story there, Walid.
Yes, sir. Well, if you look at the name of the beast that people will put on their foreheads, what is in a name? If we allow the Bible to interpret itself, there's several references to the word name in the Bible. His name shall be called Wonderful Counselor, Mighty God, Everlasting Father, Prince of Peace. On his thigh written a name, King of Kings and Lord of Lords. His name shall be called Emmanuel, which means God with us. Those are not names. Those are titles. Those are declarations of faith. The declaration of faith that we have as Christians, we believe in his name, not just the word Jesus, but in his attributes, that he is Emmanuel, God with us. Only our faith has this, that we believe God visited us, and that we believe he died for our sins. These are the names of God. So in essence, they will put the name of the beast. The beast is the kingdom. So in essence, they will put the declaration of the faith, that is a blasphemous declaration, on their forehead. It doesn't have to be a computer chip. There is no mandate in the Bible requiring a computer chip. It is a declaration of faith. Muslims all around the world are beginning to put, you see them in the demonstrations everywhere. They put emblems on their forehead and on their right arms as well that says there is no God but Allah and Muhammad is the messenger of Allah. And they claim that Muhammad is the perfect man. They give him Christ-like attributes. The Muslims are waiting for the Mahdi. The Mahdi is the reincarnation of the Prophet Muhammad. So Muhammad, in essence, wants to come again just like Jesus. So in essence, you will have this Mahdi coming up to the Muslims. Does the Mahdi play a role in the Bible? Do all these things play a role in the Bible? If we look at the Bible, we look at the Antichrist, none of us for certain can prove he comes from Western Europe. In fact, if we look at the text, he comes from the Little Horn, out of the Greco Empire, which is, by the way, controlled today by the Muslims. It's part of the Eastern Roman Empire. And this Antichrist that comes, what does he do? He honors a god of war, a god of fortresses. And if we look at his attributes, what does he say? He doesn't honor the desire of women. He attempts to change times and laws. Well, what is today happening in the world? Who wants to change the laws of all over the world? The Muslims want to change the laws to establish their Sharia laws to dominate the whole world. This is the main question that's going around all the world, is establishing Islamic Sharia law. So I have a different concept, and maybe we can dialogue over it.
All right, well, you go right ahead. We'll be interested in what your thoughts are.
Well, this is my view, because if we look at Rome, you know, there is 15 references in the Bible about Rome. And not one of them is literal destruction of Rome. There is no direct reference. We are interpreting the allegories to mean Rome. The woman riding on the beast being Rome, because Rome has seven hills. But if you look at the context of Revelation regarding the seven hills, it says they are also seven kings. These are not literal hills. You know, what is a hill or a mountain? In the Bible, it's very clear. Jesus said, if you have faith of a mustard seed, you can move the mountains. Well, he doesn't mean literal mountains, he means kingdoms. And in fact, he is described himself as a stone that will strike the image at the feet, and the stone grew up to become a great mountain, which is the kingdom of Christ. So there are seven kingdoms with seven kings. Five have fallen, and John has given us the nations or the empires that came before the Roman. The five ones that fell is Egypt, Assyria, Babylonia, Medo-Persia, Grecia, and then the Roman, the sixth one. But he's talking about the seventh. Which empire took the mantle from the Roman Empire? Well, the barbarians sacked Rome. Rome continued to exist in the eastern parts, in Turkey, Asia Minor, which is the eastern parts of the Roman Empire. That was taken over by Muhammad II and the Ottoman Muslim Empire, the seventh one. And that one is wounded, it comes back again. That's what we see today.
And certainly we see this resurgence of radical Islam coming about. And we'll be back here in just a moment with our special guest, Wally Shobat, and we'll tell you how to get in touch with him to get his books, to get his videos, the various material that he's offering. Fascinating material. I think that you'll find him a fascinating speaker, a fascinating intellect. We'll be back in just a moment here at Radio Liberty. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty. Our guest is Waleed Shobat, and we're talking about, we're really talking about the things that are unfolding in the Middle East today, as we see America increasingly being drawn into more and more in the way of battles. We're in a situation where we, whatever you feel about how we got into Iraq, we are in a situation where if we leave, there'll be chaos. If we stay, there's going to be chaos. And President's solution to a difficult problem in an effort to appease the people who want to get the troops out is he wants to put more troops in. Do you see what's going on there in the Middle East as sort of in many ways the beginning of the fulfillment of prophecies?
Yes, sir. We have to look at certain elements of prophetic scripture as a long-term process. If we look, let's say, at the bear in Daniel. The bear in Daniel was the ancient Medo-Persian Empire. That was fulfilled, yes. But there is a long-term fulfillment of this bear arising because, remember, he rises on one side. Persia without Media. Media is Kurdistan. So that means Iran will arise as a power after Iraq. Iraq was the superpower in the Middle East. The Bible is Middle Eastern-centric. And Westerners in America make the Bible to become global-centric or Western-centric. I guess the Americans want to become the Antichrist. I don't know why, but that's not what the Bible is talking about. It's talking about the Middle East. So we have the bear rising on one side, which is Iran, which will take four ribs in its mouth. Yes, that was fulfilled in a short term in the past, but there is a future fulfillment. Iraq will be broken down in three elements. We see this today exactly what's happening. We have a sectarian war. There is a demand by the West of breaking down Iraq. One of the suggestions is to break it down to the Shia sector, the Sunni sector, and the Kurdish sector. Eventually, because of the majority of Shia in Iraq, I think that Iran will control Iraq. And when they do, they will have a horn, basically, all the way to Israel, because Syria, being an Alawite government, will be following Iran as they are today. And then in Lebanon, there's an establishment of the Hezbollah, which is a government within a government, which is also a Shiite government. So the Shia control is heavy. Now, there is a vacuum in the Middle East with the Sunnis being 85%. Now, being 85% and they're not the superpower, they have to emerge with their own superpower to kind of be bigger than Iran. And that will happen. And it will happen in Turkey, because Turkey is the strongest country in the Sunni world.
Hold that thought. We'll be back here in just a moment with Waleed. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and before we get back to the discussion of where Turkey fits into this, let me just ask Waleed to get his telephone number out, his website, and how people can get in touch with you and get the material you have to offer.
Well, they can call 720-935-2826. Our website is Shobat, shoebat.com, just as you spell the word shoe and the word bat.com, one word together. My book is Why I Left Jihad, and in it I explain in depth all the things I'm speaking about.
And of course, what about, do you want to mention your DVD, which we've seen, which is, I think, is excellent?
Yeah, I have a few DVDs. I have a Christian DVD that you can get on the website, From Hate to Love, and there is several testimonials, and there are several books as well, other kinds of material. And I'm also writing a new book called Why We Want to Kill You. And it is about 280 pages, talks about Islam and radical Islam.
All right, fine. And give that telephone number just one more time.
720-935-2826.
All right, fine. And that's 720-935-2826. And you were talking about Turkey. Now, Turkey is sort of, well, the leaders of Turkey would like to go with the West and join NATO. NATO obviously doesn't want them because they don't want all those Muslims coming into Europe and even diluting what's going on there even further. And so Turkey is being pushed increasingly towards an alignment with the Muslim world. So where does Turkey fit into what's going on? Because it is a very powerful and a very prosperous nation.
Let's not forget, Turkey is mentioned literally in Scripture, Lydia. And in Ezekiel, it mentions about Lydia also being one of those nations that are cast into the pit or to hell. Turkey is where the Muslim empire was wounded. And that's where they want to heal that wound. All Muslim fundamentalists look towards Turkey because that's where the Ottoman Islamic empire was dismantled and the caliphate was dismantled. Let's not forget, a caliph is the vicar of Muhammad on earth. This has to be established for the Muslim nation to rise. And the best candidate for that is Turkey. Let's not forget the statement of Erdogan, who is the prime minister of Turkey, who said, and he went to prison for it, he said, the mosques are our refuge, the domes are our helmets, the minarets are our bayonets, and the Muslims are our foot soldiers. In essence, he says he wants to reestablish jihad globally. And his wife wears Sharia, and he's trying to change the laws, exactly as what the scripture mandates. He's trying to change the laws in Turkey to make Sharia Islamic law. And by peace, he will deceive many. I don't know if he's the Antichrist, but I believe the Antichrist will come from the eastern parts of the Roman Empire. We do not disagree with the Western. We believe in the same thing. We believe in a revival of a Roman Empire. But I think our adjustment is that it's an eastern part of the Roman Empire that we're talking about, not the western part. Let's not forget, part of the western Roman Empire is North Africa, which is Algeria, Tunisia, Morocco, Mauritania. So if you want to revive a Roman Empire, what are we going to do with these western parts of the Roman Empire? So we can see that and all these countries are mentioned, let's not forget, Put, P-H-U-T, is mentioned, this is North Africa. And Ludin, which is Turkey, is mentioned literally.
And I think that's really the real problem with most of Americans is they really don't understand history. They don't understand that certainly, although the western part of the Roman Empire fell in 476, the eastern part of the Roman Empire listed, what, it was 12 or 1400 when it finally fell.
1451, but fell to Muhammad II.
And that was the end of the Byzantine Empire. And then, of
course, the Roman Empire, yes.
And then, of course, you ended up with the Ottoman Empire, and that fell already, of course, after the First World War.
Yes, and if you look at the text of Revelation regarding those mountains, there's only seven, and it says the one that was wounded is also him. He will be the eighth. Basically, it will revive again. If we look at the revival of Islam, it's all over the place. If we look at the revival of Rome, what's happening in Rome these days? Well, I mean, the Pope made some statements. He got himself a lot of heat, and there's demonstrations all over the Muslim globe against the Pope. So how is it that the Pope is the harlot of Babylon? Doesn't seem to fit the scenario that we have. I think we need to revisit these things, and let's be open. I mean, let's be open. Let's not throw all the theories out the window. Let's be open that there could be an adjustment to our theories. The theories are not wrong. They just need to be adjusted.
Well, anyway, if you're out there in the listening audience and you'd like to talk to Wally, give us a call. Our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. But Wally, certainly as a Palestinian who becomes a Christian, understands the Muslim faith and the fanaticism really in this faith, which is totally oppressive. There is no freedom when you are a Muslim. You're totally dedicated to it, and you will obey it. Would that be a fairly good interpretation?
It is a good interpretation, but it's a lot worse than this. I mean, those people plan to behead believers. You know, and in the book of Revelation, it's very clear. I saw the martyrs who were beheaded in the name of Jesus. This system will behead Christians. And I think the Muslims are being set up to do this job. They have beheadings galore. When I used to tell Americans, when I first became a Christian in 1993, I said, look, these people are going to blow up your building. They're going to behead people. I was thrown out of the churches. Nobody was interested in what I had to say.
Well, that's what do they say about a prophet in his own land? Anyway, you certainly, of course, you talk in your DVD about this intense hatred of the Jews. You know, by the Palestinians, by the Muslims. And my wife had commented the hate in Jewish songs that you'd been told about. You were told that the Jews hated hated the Palestinians. They hated the Muslims.
Well, isn't that true? The Jews never hated the Palestinians or the Muslims. And the hatred is not just the Jews. The hatred of the Christian world. The major hatred is towards Christendom, much more even than towards Israel. They consider Christendom, and that's why they call us the Crusaders. They want to take over the Christian world. Now we see the truth. It is not just a war between the Muslims and Israel. It's between the Muslims and the rest of Christendom, the Judeo-Christian world. That's what they're trying to obliterate.
And of course, but what about the average? Certainly in within the Palestinians, why, of course, they've been just almost bred into this over several generations, this intense hatred of Israel and this frustration because, you know, I would have thought that the Arab world, the Muslim world, would have tried to find a place for the Palestinians to go to, but it's almost as if the Arab leaders, the Muslim leaders, really didn't want a solution. They wanted a problem. They wanted to breed this hatred.
Well, Israel did offer Yasser Arafat over 90% of the land, and he rejected it. In fact, Israel wanted to rebuild the refugee camps and build apartments for the Palestinians, and the Arabs rejected it, because it's not the issue of land. Palestine and this conflict is not about land. It's about a psychosis that wants to destroy the Jewish people. In fact, it is in the Islamic eschatological teaching. If I share with your audience the Islamic eschatological teaching, it's an eye-opener. Because the Prophet Muhammad says that the Day of Judgment shall not come to pass until the tribes of Islam defeat the tribes of Israel in Jerusalem and the surrounding nations, and then the trees and the stones will cry out, there's a Jew hiding behind me, come, O Muslim, come and kill him. In fact, I remember when we studied these eschatological teaching, I was in high school in Bethlehem, and the teacher says, we can take the women. We don't kill a woman, but we take them as concubines, and we can have children with them. I said, excuse me, isn't that adultery? And he said, no, it's not adultery. I said, is it consensual? And he said, it doesn't have to be. That was my teacher. And when I looked at the words of Zechariah, I will make Jerusalem a trembling cup to all surrounding nations. The houses will be rifled and the women ravished. Let's not forget the surrounding nations, the neighbors of Israel, are all Muslim.
And, of course, the incredible thing is that, you know, of all the places in the entire world today, Israel and Jerusalem seem to be the centers of this whole world conflict. And you wonder why, of course, it's going on. Well, I believe it's going on because it's God's plan. Don't you believe that?
Yes, it is God's plan. He will make Jerusalem a trembling cup to all surrounding nations. It's exactly what we see. Jerusalem, which doesn't have oil, it doesn't have much of resources. It's simply small little narrow roads and stones and things like that, and the whole world's going to go over a war, not just over Jerusalem, but over the Temple Mount situation. The Muslims have never been interested in the Temple Mount. Only recently they become very interested in the Temple Mount. No Muslim leader really visited it besides Umar ibn al-Khattab and King Hussein and his father and al-Walid ibn Abd al-Malik, who built the Dome of the Rock, to be a rival to other places in the Muslim world. It never worked out. The Muslims were never interested. In fact, Muhammad redirected the prayer from Jerusalem to Mecca. Muslims pray towards the black stone in Mecca. And by the way, the black stone became black because it took away the sins of the Muslim world. Can you imagine such a salvation message?
Well, the whole thing is really in some ways so terribly ridiculous, but it's frightening too because, of course, there's so many people. And they're not bad people, but they've followed a false religion, which I believe has its basis in satanic teachings.
Yes.
And, you know, I do not, I really question when some of our leaders tell us we all worship the same God. We've just all got to get along together. And I believe we certainly, the last thing I want to do is see a world war. But certainly we do not worship the same God. They have an entirely different philosophy. And
right.
They really, Allah is not the God of the Bible. That's
He's not the God of the Bible. In fact, all world leaders kowtow to Islam, including our president, who said Islam is a peaceful religion. That is an error. Every single leader in the world says Islam is a peaceful religion. And what does the Bible tell us? By peace, he will deceive many. The world will be deceived with this peace, that it's peaceful, but it's not peaceful. In fact, Revelation tells us about a lamb with two horns, two power pegs. It looks like a lamb, but it speaks like a dragon. In other words, it has the essence and facade of being a true religion, a Judeo-Christian look-alike, but in reality, it speaks blasphemies, and it has two power pegs. Well, I could see the Sunni and the Shia being those two power pegs, because that's the two divisions of Islam.
Well, you know, it really is so interesting as we see what's going on today, and as you mentioned, the Muslims are waiting for the return of the Mahdi. The Jews are waiting for the return of their Messiah. The Indians, the Hindus, are waiting for the return of the Maitreya, and the Christians are waiting for the return of Jesus Christ. I mean, it's almost as if everybody in the world is really expecting some great event is about to happen.
Well, Christ warned us that there will be false Christs and a lot of replicas out there, but my sheep hears my voice. So we know his voice, we know his tune, we follow the shepherd. And that's what we're instructed to do, just to keep following the shepherd. There is victory on the other side. We are on the right side.
Amen to that. Of course, I think the important thing is you have to get into the scriptures. You have to read and study the scriptures to really be able to understanding what's going on. And I believe there's so many false interpretations of what's happening. And when, of course, people are not simply whisked out of here before everything falls apart, and, of course, should America go into a chaotic situation and they begin rounding up people in America as they did in Hitler's Germany, what are the Christians going to say? Why, we're not supposed to be here. And then they'll begin to question everything they've been taught, you know, because of some false teachings. And as we've seen in Germany, why the people of Germany, which were Christians and Protestant belief had its foundation, certainly turned against God turned against Christianity after the reign of Adolf Hitler because they've been lied to by their ministers.
Well, pride is the most dangerous element. We've been warned about pride. God hates pride. In fact, one of the names of Allah in the Quran is the most proud one, or Al-Mutakabbir. This is one of the names of God in the Quran. So we don't have such a name in the Bible. God is not the Al-Mutakabbir, the most proud one. Nazism was based on pride. This essence of pride that we are better people, it ended up breeding racism and hatred. So we have to be, as Christians, very careful not to allow leaven to enter. Once a little leaven enters, then the rest is history. So we have to be diligent, and we have to be like the Bereans, being careful that we do not, you know, it doesn't take much to weave off the road. Just a few degrees to the right, and then you're down a cliff.
I think it was really so interesting, the points you brought out in your earlier and the points you brought out in your DVD. And that is the close relationship between the Grand Mufti of Jerusalem, who is really the leader, the spiritual leader of the Muslim world, and Adolf Hitler.
That's right. I mean, let's not forget, the Nazi war machine was comprised of 8 different divisions. Well, 2 of those divisions were Muslim fundamentalists. The Khanzar division, which was Bosnian, and the Albanian division. So most Americans do not know that Islamic radicalism played a role with the Nazi war machine and in Nazi Germany. In fact, if you look at the edicts that Nazi Germany came up with regarding the Jews, most Americans do not know that the yellow patch Jews had to put on their right shoulder did not come from Nazism. It came from Islam, which dominated Spain. And in Spain, Jews had to put yellow patches under Harun al-Rashid, part of the so-called golden era of Islam. Jews had to put yellow patches. And if you take the Nazi edicts regarding the Jews and the Islamic edicts regarding the Jews, you will find them to be parallel almost to an exact.
Well, I think we are living in exciting, exciting times, and I think it's so vitally important that people get back to the scriptures and begin to interpret what's happening and then prepare for what I think are going to be very, very difficult times. I really believe starting this coming year, and probably between 2007 and 2008, America will change dramatically. What message would you like to leave with our listeners today, Waleed?
Well, I think the message is that America is the only thing that's left as a beacon to the world. And we have to get out of the political correctness. Christians need to become active in the media. Christians don't like the media. They complain about the media, but they don't do anything about it. That we need to be proactive as Christians and not reactive. Us as Christians, our job is not just to huddle together as sheep. But our job is to be set amongst wolves, to fight the wolves, to fight this battle in the media and in our political process. So we need to be very active Christians.
Well, all right, fine. What would you say would be the most important thing that a Christian could do at the present time? How should they be approaching the media, and what should the message be that they're trying to get out?
Well, we need to make our own events to penetrate the media. We need to understand how the media works. That is, that just what I'm doing, you know, we create events. We go to universities. We focus on the next generation. The universities of America are being engulfed with liberalism and with lies. We need to go to the universities, bring Christian speakers at the universities as well, to tell the truth to the next generation Americans.
Amen to that. Well, you hang on here. We're going to be just be back in just a moment to wrap up the program here with Mr. Waleed Shabbat. That's Waleed and Shubat, Shoebat. And again, the number is 720-935-2826. Well, Waleed, do you want to get your website up one more time before we let you go? And then we've got about 3 minutes before the program's over.
Great, Shoebat.com. Shoe, as you spell the word shoe, Shoebat. Shoe and a bat together, .com.
All right, now, do you have any essays or things that you've written there that they would be able to pull out?
I have a book called Why I Left Jihad, The Root of Terrorism and the Rise of Radical Islam. It's an must to every Christian because it tells us the threat of global Islam. And it tells us what the Bible warns us about Islam in much depth.
Well, what can we do, though, if we were able to convince the leaders of America what you're speaking of, what should they be doing today? I mean, do we want to expand the war in the Middle East?
What we want to do is keep our troops in Iraq, at the same time find alternate source of energy, because it is the oil that is killing us. We are dependent on oil. Our president said that America is addicted to oil. We and every American aids and abets terrorism every time they pump gas in their car. That is a fact because billions of dollars are being spent to propagate fundamental Islam by Saudi Arabia. That is the most major thing we need to get out of. Let's redig Alaska, change the political process, and let's speak as Christians. For a change, instead of what we're seeing what the Democrats are doing, our voices need to be heard. And if our voices are heard as a major minority in this country, we can make a difference.
All right, fine. Well, I'm certain that we can. It's just a matter of getting the people motivated, understanding what's going on, and of course, understanding that behind everything going on, I believe there's a powerful spiritual forces that are energizing everything. Would you agree with that?
Yes. We do not fight against flesh and blood, but against spiritualities, and, you know, they are in high places. This is the war that we have, and we are the agents to fight that war. We are ambassadors for Christ, so we better act like ambassadors.
All right, God bless you, and thank you very much for being with us, Waleed.
Thank you very much. I hope we get you
on to our other programs later on. I'll be talking to you, the gentleman I talked to before. Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
Bye-bye. Okay, fine. Well, I guess today was Waleed Shubat, and of course we're talking really about what's going on in the world today. And the world has changed. It's changed dramatically. 10 years ago, you never heard at all any mention of the Muslim threat to the world. In fact, there really wasn't. It seems that the more we do, why, the worse things get. The more hatred is growing. This radical form of Muslim was not a major factor until, of course, it began funded by the CIA. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, and to help you perhaps understand some of the things that are going on, we talk about the Holocaust. Did it happen? Some people question it happened. Well, we put together a four-tape set of people who lived through that era. It's called the Holocaust. What really happened? What is the Muslim faith? Well, if you want, of course, to spend 2 or 3 years studying the Muslim faith, you can, but we have a four-tape set. My interviews with Craig Wynn, who actually spent 2 to 3 years studying the Muslim faith. He wrote a book, Prophet of Doom, which is out of not available now. I think the copies are, we sold the last ones, and they're available now for 20 or, pardon me, $80 or $100 up on the Internet. It's a 1,000-page book, but we have a four-tape set of my interviews with Craig called Islam, the Religion of Doom. Islam, the Religion of Doom. It is probably one of the finest four-tape sets we have because it goes into the fact that Muhammad feared that he was satanically possessed. And time again, you see the references to Muhammad being satanically possessed. And that's, of course, why they put a contract out on Salman Rushdie, because he wrote a book called Satanic Verse, simply quoting from the Muslim scriptures. But when you're dealing with a worldwide satanic movement that embraces not only the Muslim faith, but certainly it has infiltrated the Christian faith, and the Catholic, the Protestant, the Jewish faith, there really is a satanic force in the world today. To understand how this whole radical form of Islam came around, you'll certainly want to get our book. It's called The Devil's Game by Robert Dreyfus, who goes into how the CIA financed Hamas and how the CIA financed the Muslim Brotherhood and this whole radical Islamic movement. We have created the best enemy money could buy. Why at this time is this all coming to pass? I believe, of course, that there is a master plan. And if you haven't read my pamphlets called The Occult Hierarchy, they're three little pamphlets, inexpensive, we suggest you get them and read them to understand that there is a cosmic script that's being followed today. And if you don't understand the cosmic script, why, you can't understand any of the players, and you certainly can't understand the plot that's unfolding before us. It is truly a cosmic plot. That's The Occult Hierarchy, the book, The Devil's Game, the four-tape set, and there are two of them. One is Islam, the Religion of Doom, and the other is The Holocaust, What Really Happened. They're all available by calling 1-800-544-8927. 1-800-544-8927. If you haven't read my book called Brotherhood of Darkness, it's inexpensive, it's easy to read, but it will begin to introduce you to this whole spiritual battle that's taking place today. And then, of course, you can certainly get the DVD or the VHS of that, if you'd prefer, or even listen to it on tape. It's called The Brotherhood of Darkness. But it will begin to explain what's going on today, the things that just don't make sense. But they really do make sense. I mean, certainly the American people wanted to pull our troops out of Iraq. I mean, that's why most of them voted, you know, and overwhelmingly voted for the Democrats in the November election. And so what's the president going to do? He's going to increase our troop strength in Iraq so that we can pull our troops out. Now, maybe you understand that, but I certainly don't understand that. They're talking about trying to work out some sort of an agreement with Iran. Now, maybe we can negotiate with them, but we're not going to talk to them. We're just going to negotiate with them. How can you solve any problems if you don't talk to the people you're trying to negotiate with? And this is all showbiz, ladies and gentlemen. The real plan is a war with Iran, a war with the Muslim world. You need to get the background. You need to get our three pamphlets on Foreknowledge 911. That's Foreknowledge 911. You need to get the book, The Devil's Game, and then, of course, so much of the other material that we have available, I think our pamphlet's on $4.911. We'll give you tremendous understanding. Our telephone number again, 1-800-544-8927. 1-800-544-8927. Our webpage, RadioLiberty.com. Please pray for America. Pray for Radio Liberty, for our provision and protection.
You're listening to the Global Star Radio Network, located at Telstar 5 KU band, frequency 11836, symbol rate 20770. Thank you for listening.
With news on the Information Radio Network, I'm John Russell. The incoming chairman of the Senate Foreign Relations Committee is promising to fight the president if he decides to send more troops to Iraq. With more on that story, here's correspondent Rita Foley.
Senator Joe Biden says one mistake the president shouldn't make as he decides how to proceed with the Iraq war is to send more troops.
We've tried it. It's failed. We need a political settlement.
Another mistake, Biden said on CBS's The Early Show.
If we stay the course, add more troops, try what we've done before. It seems to me we're in the worst of all circumstances.
Biden's solution? Draw down troops gradually and tell the Iraqis they have to make the hard political decisions. Rita Foley, Washington.
Global AIDS coordinator Mike Dybul acknowledges there have been some problems in reporting.
Guyana, there were a lot of problems. We knew about those problems. We've been dealing with them since long before the IG report. It has to do with the infrastructure and what to